Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Goodpods, whatever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any questions, any suggestions. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And if you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was a great episode where Kristen Smith, she joined the podcast to talk about the American Board of Medical Microbiology Certification, or the ABMM. And these are some credentials that maybe those of you that work in the lab, maybe you see your director that they have, which is, you know, like a D, parentheses, ABMM. And this certification allows them to perform as laboratory directors. And in the episode, Kristen Smith, you know, she talks about the requirements, you know, what kind of degrees are acceptable to sit for this examination. She talks about the CPIP fellowship and all the details, which this fellowship, you know, it prepares you, it trains you to sit for that examination and then be able to work as a laboratory director in microbiology. And that's a very serious job, as you know. It entails a lot of technical information, a lot of training. Because, you know, those are the ones that they're pretty much the physicians talk to. And these lab directors, they evaluate testing, they bring new testing, they evaluate susceptibilities, they implement, you know, new, bring new instruments, go over validations, they do all sorts of things. And like I was telling Kristen, you know, this is an individual that needs to be properly trained and properly qualified because it is a big responsibility. And when we have difficult cases, those of you that work in the bench and have access to a director, a lot of times you get stuck on a culture and maybe you ask your senior tech or you ask your supervisor and maybe they don't have that answer. So at the end of the day, that question goes to the director. So they have to make all these decisions. So this is definitely someone that needs to have a lot of knowledge and training. All in all, this was a great episode. And Kristen, thank you so much for taking the time, like I said, and I appreciate it. And I hope that those of you that requested this episode, that, you know, that it answers your questions. I definitely enjoy recording it and learning about the ABMM certification. And of course, in the episode, she goes over the exam details and resources that are used to prepare for it. So if you haven't checked that out, please go ahead and do so. And before we move to today's episode, as always, if you want to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. And these resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more. And they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Definitely some great resources by Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to today's episode. And if you were expecting an interview, today there isn't one. So today's type of episode where I sit and talk about organisms. So if you enjoy those, this one is definitely for you. And if you're not a fan, I hope that you stay and listen anyway. It's great material, and I hope that you share it with someone. I always like to talk about the organisms, their reactions, and building those fundamental concepts that we need to know when we are working on the bench, since we need to know so much information. And I invite you to check out the last episodes that I did that were just about organisms, which was a series about bacillus. And those were episodes 75 through 77. And in them, you know, I start going over different species of bacillus. Then I move over to morphology and media. And on the last episode of the series, I talk about Bacillus anthracis. As you know, it truly deserves its own episode because it's a very serious organism and one that we hope that we never see in our careers. Which brings something to mind that at the very least, you know, we'll probably never see it in the States in clinical, you know, human microbiology, better said. Because, you know, I was doing an episode with Kelly Maddock, which she works at a lab in North Dakota. and a veterinary lab. And sometimes, you know, so you see bacillus, you know, see anthrax in cattle. So she was talking about at that time when we recorded the episode that they were seeing a small outbreak. So they were getting testing for it in the lab. So, you know, it's kind of like a little bit freaky in a sense to think about that stuff, because you're doing anthrax testing and we wouldn't do it here in the lab. I mean, if we suspect that, we have to send it out, you know, to our reference lab, which it's, you know, is the state health department. But, you know, just to think about that, where you are actually doing all this testing that you normally wouldn't see, but it's just because it's in an animal population, you see different things. So, I don't know, it's like a weird thing to sometimes, you know, to wrap your head around. So you're working in a lab seeing all this anthrax testing, which is something that in human microbiology we wouldn't see. And that's a good thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's something that I find very interesting. And I mentioned this before to some people, but about a colleague at one point in time that she worked in a vet lab, and you know, their patient population, it was like they had chickens. So they used to see a lot of salmonella in the cultures. So it is one of those things. But anyway, if you haven't checked out episodes 75 through 77, I invite you to please go ahead and do so. And of course, since we're talking about Bacillus anthracis, in that episode, I talk about the famous LPX survey and the criteria for you to be able to rule out Bacillus anthracis. Because like I mentioned, in the lab, if we suspect it and then we're doing this test and we are unable to rule it out, we need to stop testing and then send that sample to a reference lab. And, you know, in that episode, I go over things like the Sentinel protocol and things like that. Great episode, so please go ahead and check them out. So following the line of gram-positive rods, on today's episode, I want to continue going over them. So this one, unlike Bacillus anthracis, we do see other species of Bacillus, like Cereus and other ones, but this one, we do see it in the lab, and we hear terms like tumbling umbrella motility. We might hear in the news about recalls to this organism. We hear about outbreaks. This organism likes the cold, so you can find it in things like, you know, like cold cuts, you know, like cheese, ham. We have heard about outbreaks about in ice cream, in nectarines, in frozen vegetables. So this is an organism that pops on the news. And this organism is Listeria. And if you are curious to see what type of outbreaks has Listeria been seen on, I invite you to go ahead and, you know, using a search engine of your choice, search for Listeria outbreaks, and it will take you to the page of the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and it will list where the outbreaks have been seen, what's the product, it gives you the number of cases, if it's resolved or not. So I invite you to check that out. It's always great. I mean, the CDC, of course, they have a lot of great information and resources for physicians and the lab, and it provides a lot of details on these microorganisms. So I invite you to check it out. And for those of you that work in the lab, definitely if you run like meningitis panels, because this organism is definitely seen in meningitis, you know that Listeria is one of the targets on those panels. And that brings me to the question that I always like to ask my students, as I am teaching bacteriology: what other organisms are seen in meningitis? If you were running one of these panels, what organisms would you expect to see? So, I have covered some of them already, but I'll go over them. You will expect to see Listeria, Streptococcus agalactiae, Streptococcus pneumoniae, Cryptococcus neoformans, E. coli, Haemophilus influenza, and Neisseria meningitidis. So it's a great question that I always like to ask my students to kind of reinforce those concepts and have them study more and go over the organisms. Well, Listeria is a facultative anaerobic gram-positive rod, and I have gone over terms like error tolerance, so I have done many episodes about anaerobes, so if you want more information or do a little refresher, please go ahead and check them out. But this one is a facultative anaerobe. It is catalase positive, and the most significant species is Listeria monocytogenes. Listeria is part of the order Bacillalis and the family Listeriaceae. And there are other species based on 16S RNA testing, which are Listeria evanovii, which it has two subspecies, Isnevii and Londoniensis. And then there's Listeria marthii, Inocua, Welshemeri, and Seeligeri. And these ones, according to the Manual of Clinical Microbiology for the American Society for Microbiology, these species are classified as Listeria sensu lato and may be assigned to other genera in the future. And sensu lato means in the broader sense. And of course, you know, the one thing about microbiology, right, is taxonomy and reclassification, which can be a nightmare sometimes. So organisms, you know, the names, they get renamed and they get changed, and sometimes it causes this huge debates in the community, and some people might like it, some don't. But, you know, that, as of right now, that's just the way it is. So these ones might be assigned to other genera in the future. And they have been identified from the natural environment and food environments. And as of right now, they are unlikely to be pathogenic to humans. So as mentioned before, Listeria monocytogenes is the species of interest, since for us humans, it is pathogenic. It is in the environment and it has been isolated from many animals. And one of the concerns with Listeria is that it is able to survive at cold temperatures, like 4 degrees Celsius. And as I mentioned before, I mentioned some outbreaks. And these outbreaks, they can be for a wide variety of food products. You can eat like ham, cheese, and things like that. So this organism can be acquired from eating contaminated food products that we keep at those temperatures, like cheese, processed meat, cold cuts. And there's an interesting fact from the Manual of Clinical Microbiology from the ASM, and that is that our intestinal tracts are colonized with 1 to 5% Listeria. And that is very interesting to know. Listeria is seen in food-related infections, and this is how it is primarily transmitted. And you can also see it in nosocomial outbreaks in neonatal wards. As far as adults, it is seen in septicemia, meningitis, gastroenteritis, and central nervous system infections. Other infections include abscess and pericarditis. And that was definitely a very interesting fact and one that I was not aware of. And this is why it's always good to read and right, continue doing research. And that's one of the things that I love about this process in the podcast, which is that in order to prepare for episodes, I go over my resources and I look over things and I read. And it was very interesting. You never, you know, we can have so many organisms in our body and sometimes, you know, we don't know what they are. So learning about that was very interesting. And pretty much, you know, a lot of us know that some people are colonized with Staph aureus and things like that, but was definitely not aware about Listeria. And I always invite you to read about these things, and if you want to learn more about the what kind of organisms we have in our body and just learning about the microbiota in general, is a very interesting topic. And I was at a conference recently where there was a talk about that, and it was fascinating. So stay tuned for a future episode where I go over that topic. And those of you that work in the lab and are clinical microbiologists, you know that this organism is definitely critical in neonates. So it causes infections in neonates. So it causes an influenza-like illness in patients that are pregnant, and it crosses the placenta, and it can cause preterm labor, abortion, and stillbirth. And that is why this is an organism that needs to be ruled out in neonates. So it is very important that when you have blood cultures in the lab, if you have gram-positive rods from a neonate, you need to rule out Listeria. And those of you that are familiar with blood cultures, you know, a lot of times gram-positive rods, they tend to be contamination in blood cultures, right? If you get things like bacillus, if you get things like lactobacillus, cornebacterium. So most of the time, they tend to be contamination, right? Like maybe the area wasn't cleaned properly, and hospitals and labs, you know, they have a process where they monitor blood cultures and organisms like this and coagulase negative staph, and then they report them and they evaluate the data, and maybe sometimes, you know, and they report this information to the nurses and doctors, and maybe sometimes some type of retraining is done to make sure that the area is properly clean. But when it comes to this organism, this is not a contaminant, and it is a very serious one. And I will talk about morphology in a minute, but I have some data from the CDC, and this is that according to them, there are about 1,600 people get listeriosis, which is the name for a listeria infection, each year, with 260 of those resulting in deaths. And according to the CDC, most cases of listeriosis are actually caused by Listeria monocytogenes. And as I said before, go to the CDC's webpage, and if you want to dive more into this organism, I definitely encourage you to do so. As far as virulence factors, there is Listeriolysin O, and this is produced once Listeria has been phagocytized. This toxin enables the organism to avoid intracellular killing and spread to the bloodstream. Listeria monocytogenes also has another protein which is called ACTA, and it gives it cell-to-cell spread activity. Alright everyone, so we're in the lab, right? We're microbiologists, so Lewis gives us morphology, gives us biochemicals. That's what we need to know when we're doing our job. So here we go. As I said before, it is a facultative anaerobic gram-positive broad, so it will grow in anaerobic conditions, but the organism grows in aerobic conditions. So typically, if you're doing, you probably will see this a lot in blood cultures. So if you have an anaerobic blood culture bottle where you do a blood plate and you incubate it aerobically, and you do a blood plate and you incubate it anaerobically, you will see it growing in both. The gram-positive runs, they are short and might be in short chains. And according to a great resource that I always use, which is Bailey and Scott's Microbiology, they might resemble strep. And when it comes to resembling strep, I think that this is really true on the plate, because they're both, and I'll talk more about this, but they're both like beta hemolytic and like a milky white. But to be honest, you know, in my experience, I'm not quite sure about on the gram stain. I know that the rods, you know, they're definitely short. And this is something that is big when you are learning about gram stains and gram-positive rods. As you know, with cocci, you have different arrangements, right? You have tetrads, you have clusters, you have chains. And when it comes to rods morphology, it's a big factor in learning, you know, correlating this and learning about these organisms. So you remember bacillus, we use terms like boxy. So they tend to be like a little, they're big gram-positive rods. When it comes to lactobacillus, they are long and thin. When it comes to Corynebacterium, they are coryniform. So you see like the palisades, kind of like a V shape. So you see that snapping division. And when it comes to these, the Listeria gram-positive rods, they are short. So a typical presentation, it's a neonate that you get a blood culture. And then on day one, it is flag as positive. And then on the gram stain, you see short gram-positive rods. So you need to consider the possibility of Listeria. And as microbiologists, it's something that we do, that we start thinking, right? Especially when we're working on blood cultures, you know, we start thinking about, we see morphology, we see arrangements, and then we start thinking ahead about what type of organism we have. And this is, you know, so we are prepared, especially when we get it on the plate. And then we do the proper testing, and as microbiologists, we just want to make sure that we properly identify the organism and we don't miss anything. Having said that, there are some atypical presentations of Listeria, and sometimes, you know, you might see them in adult patients, where those of you that work with blood cultures, you know, we keep the bacterial ones, we keep them for 5 days. When you get organisms like Listeria, E. coli, Staph aureus, the culture flags positive fairly quickly, but in this atypical presentation of Listeria, maybe a day two after 24 hours, it flags as positive, and then you do a gram stain, and you don't see the typical short gram positive rods. You see them a little bit longer, but then when the organism grows on the plate, then you see the typical Listeria morphology and typical Listeria gram stain. So that's something for you to keep in mind. And this is something that I learned because, as you know, this is such a serious organism. So you have molecular methods to identify it. So you don't have to wait for it to grow on the plate. And you can just use your blood and place it, you know, run the test, and you can get an identification on it. So we had some cases where we had a positive blood culture with gram-positive runs, and then we put it in a molecular instrument for a blood culture identification, and then it came back as Listeria. So we were not quite sure, but then we plated it, and once the organism grew, it was classic Listeria. So things like this, you know, it's good for you techs to keep them in the back of your mind, and don't definitely rule out the possibility of Listeria in adult patients. So just remember that. There are no special transport requirements for samples, but there is something called colon enrichment, and it might be used to enhance recovery of Listeria from placental tissue. In colon enrichment, the specimen is inoculated into a broth, and it is incubated at 4 degrees for weeks. As far as morphology and growth, it grows well on blood and chocolate agar, and in blood agar colonies are white, and hemolysin is produced, and this is a virulence factor. As I mentioned before, it morphologically resembles Streptococcus agalactiae, so you get those small, white, like a milky white colonies, but you know, of course, this is a gram-positive run, and Listeria is catalase-positive, so those are two things that completely rule out group B strep. As always, biochemicals and gram stain are very important as part of her work as medical lab scientist. Other biochemicals include oxidase, which is negative for it, and positive for escalene hydrolysis. And I have talked about motility before, which is movement by means of flagella, and in a wet mount, it exhibits a tumbling umbrella motility. And in the podcast, I have talked before about doing a wet mount and things like the 40x objective. So very simple, right? You add a drop, you can mix your organism with saline, and then you put a drop, put a cover slip, examine it at 40x, and then you can also prepare a wet mount you can do a motility test by incubating a broth. You also have motility agar, where the organism exhibits an umbrella-shaped motility. And this type of agar is where you stab it with your organism, and then if the organism moves outside the stab line, it is motile. If it stays, it is non-motile. And there's a color indicator where you can see the movement or lack of. As we have said, this is a serious organism, and Listeria is a nationally reportable organism here in the United States. So that means that if it's isolated, you need to report it. You know, the lab needs to report it to the State Department, and an isolate needs to be sent to them as well for serotyping. And those of you that work in the lab, you're familiar with that. So you typically, what you do is once you recover it, you sub it to like 2 chocolate slants, and you send those to the State Department, to the Department of Health, following the proper transport procedures, of course. So let's do a quick recap. Listeria, short gram-positive run, catalase-positive, tumbling umbrella motility, colonies are white, beta-hemolytic, it grows well on blood, and chocolate. There are some virulence factors, Listeria lysine O, and there's also a protein called ACTA. This organism likes the cold, and it can be found in foods that are kept at that temperature, and it is seen in cases of meningitis, among other diseases. So always keep that in mind. If you have a neonate with something like a blood culture, and you see the short gram-positive runs, start thinking Listeria. But in the back of your mind, if you see an adult, don't completely rule it out yet. But of course, you know, there are instruments that help you identify the organism before it grows on the plate. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about Listeria. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. And it was so great, you know, it's been a while since I've done this type of episodes where I just sit down and break an organism. It is always great to talk micro. So I appreciate all the support, all the downloads. Stay tuned. Great things are coming your way. As always, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.